He was a monster. California serial killer dies in prison. A serial killer known as the Sacramento Slayer, who hunted and sexually brutalized women for 2 decades, died in prison over the weekend, according to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Morris Solomon Jr. was condemned to death in 1992 for murdering 6 women, including 2 teenagers, and sexually assaulting several others. Decades prior, he had been convicted of sexually assaulting multiple young women and was implicated in several other unsolved cases. If you look back on his record, it was an 18-year reign of terror, all against women. Antonio Harvey, a Sacramento journalist and author of the book, The Homicidal Handyman of Oak Park, which chronicles Solomon's crimes, told the Epoch Times. Solomon's death leaves questions unanswered about additional victims. Now we'll never know, Harvey said, because he's taken it to his hell. And it raises new ones about the impact of California's decision to transfer death row inmates to general population facilities. While the Corrections Department announced in an August 2 press release that Solomon, who was 80, passed away, sources inside the California health care facility, the Stockton prison where he was housed, say he died because another condemned inmate beat him in the head with a metal object. Like Solomon, the suspect, William Ramos, 72, was sentenced to death in 1992. Both inmates were transferred earlier this year from death row at San Quentin Rehabilitation Center to CHCF as part of California's efforts to integrate condemned inmates with its general population at prisons across the state. Ramos received the death penalty for fatally shooting 3 women, but his sentence was recently commuted to life without parole. Though sounding the alarm about potential risks of integrating death row inmates, among them some of the most ruthless and dangerous killers, responsible for the state's most heinous crimes, say the incident is an example of the kind of violence they feared. "We were just waiting for it to happen," a CHCF staff member who spoke on condition of anonymity said of the suspected murder. "They're no longer segregated, they're getting the chance to interact with the general population, but some of them have vendettas. Okay, now I'm out, what do I have to lose if I have an old debt to settle?" they said. A peace officer at CHCF who previously worked at San Quentin described an abrupt shift in how the department approached security for condemned inmates. "When we were working with them, when they'd come out, it's with gun coverage, officers cuffing them up. These guys were considered dangerous," said the officer, who agreed to speak with the Epoch Times on condition of anonymity. "Now when they come here, they're instantly walking around, no gun coverage, and in day rooms." CHCF has manned gun towers at its entrance and exit points, along with an electrified fence, but staff members point out that there are no manned gun positions inside the perimeter, as San Quentin's death row had. "There is zero gun coverage for any of the housing units at CHCF," said another correctional officer who agreed to speak with the Epoch Times on condition of anonymity, explaining that officers are equipped with only pepper spray, a baton, or physical force. "These options are not safe during major incidents such as an attempted murder," they said. Several CHCF staff who saw video of the attack said it was obvious Solomon died as a result of blunt force trauma to the back of the head. Ramos beat him with the metal arm of a wheelchair. Both men had been in wheelchairs in a day room while they were watching television, they said. In an August 6 email to the Epoch Times, the Department of Corrections later confirmed some details of this reporting, including that on June 26 Solomon had been involved in a physical altercation with Ramos and was transported to an outside medical facility for emergency care. Solomon returned to the prison July 29 and was pronounced dead in his cell August 1. The July 26 incident was referred to the San Joaquin County District Attorney's Office, while Solomon's cause of death is pending investigation by the County Coroner's Office, the department said. Hector Bravo, a former lieutenant with the Corrections Department, told the Epoch Times in an email that it was obvious Solomon had succumbed to injuries sustained in the violent attack, and said the public announcement that he had passed away was an attempt to cover up the out-of-control violence throughout the system. Bravo added that the department documented Solomon's death as died of natural causes on its internal computer system. The Epoch Times was unable to independently verify this information. This should be a stark warning to the citizens of California that the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation are literally covering up murders, Bravo said. The Corrections Department, which usually posts deaths being investigated as homicides on its website, did not immediately respond to questions to about why the death was not announced as a possible homicide. Death row transfers. In 2019, Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order imposing a moratorium on the death penalty, closing San Quentin's execution chamber and granting all condemned prisoners temporary reprieves. The move was at odds with voters, who in recent years rejected two statewide ballot measures to repeal the death penalty. The Corrections Department in March began accelerating a pilot program begun in 2020 to phase out segregated death row units at San Quentin and the Central California Women's Facility, transferring all condemned inmates to other prisons, where they would be integrated with the general population. The department claims the policy is an effort to comply with Proposition 66, which requires condemned inmates to work to pay restitution to victims. The transfers are also part of a broader shift toward depopulating California prisons, downgrading security, and integrating prison populations as the state moves to a rehabilitative model inspired by Norway's correctional system. Currently, there are 632 condemned inmates in California. As of May 28, the vast majority of those have been transferred to other institutions, with the exception of 21 inmates in psychiatric housing, according to the department. In March, insiders, including former and current correctional officers and inmates both in the general population and on death row, told the Epoch Times that continuing to downgrade security levels and mix adversarial populations, for example, sex offenders, gang dropouts, and active gang members who have a green light to attack one another in the same yard, and now adding death row transfers to the mix, would lead to increased violence. At the time, a department representative told the Epoch Times in an email that transferred death row inmates would be designated close custody for a minimum 5 years, meaning their activities would be restricted and they would be under constant and direct supervision. But former and current correctional officers at CHCF in Stockton say they are not equipped to handle what they say is escalating violence, including incidents such as the one that involved Solomon. Overall incidents have increased significantly in recent years throughout California prisons, on average, by more than 40%. And categories such as assaults and batteries on both inmates and non-inmates, as well as use of force and sexual assaults, have also increased dramatically, even as the prison population decreases. In July alone, the department said it was investigating the deaths of four inmates as homicides and one incident of deadly force. Data show there were 18 unexpected deaths in July still pending investigation, and one confirmed homicide. CHCF is a dangerous place to work, said the CHCF correctional officer, citing inadequate staffing levels, medical overrides that downgrade security for violent offenders, and the integration of condemned inmates into the general population. The scary part is, if this was a staff member, we have zero gun coverage. We can respond, but what if the other inmates guarded the scene from the staff? The staff member would be dead, the officer said. I don't understand what the department is thinking, allowing these condemned inmates to be in general population yards, just walking freely. That inmate was beaten so badly. The same officer said assaults, batteries, gassing, and other attacks on staff happen on a daily basis. The other CHCF peace officer pointed to an acceleration of the California model as a cause of ongoing concern. The department is pushing this California model without a step-down program or slowly going from one to the next. It's like a sudden flip. Like, well, these guys are just walking around now, he said. It's almost like we're just waiting for something to happen to staff. I'm scared for this younger generation. And while some death row transfers are considered low risk, the recent incident involving Solomon and Ramos, both old and ailing men, should be a lesson. These guys were considered low-level death row before, but just because they were doesn't mean they're not capable of now. These guys are still very capable. Homicidal handyman. The 1980s and 1990s were a rough time in Sacramento, according to author Harvey, who recounts how the crack epidemic tore through an otherwise sleepy community. Murder rates were high, there were crazy drug cases, Harvey said. It was really a horrific time to be living in Sacramento, and Sacramento was a nice quiet hometown place to be living in, raise kids, buy houses, retire. It's not as fast or progressive as the Bay Area or Los Angeles or San Diego, it has its own hometown feeling. Harvey was a young reporter when he first heard about Solomon in 1990. Working with a Sacramento police homicide detective, he dug into the case. I know at one point when researching the book, going through the court cases and looking at everything, they showed me some crime scene photos and I almost bailed. I was not going to write this book, he said. He reconsidered after a discussion with his mother. She said that story has to be told, especially if it has something to do with the black community, Harvey recalled. At the time, there were few known African-American serial killers. And, although Harvey says Solomon hunted women regardless of race, his victims were mostly African-American girls and women. A jury convicted Solomon of 4 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of second-degree murder after police discovered the bodies of 7 local prostitutes, including a teenager. 5 of the victims were discovered in homes where Solomon had lived or worked. He reported discovering the 6th in a house where he had been working. All were thought to have been committed between 1986 and 1987. After surviving victims came forward, he was also convicted of multiple felony counts of sexual assault. More than half of his murder victims were buried in shallow graves, and nearly all had been bound. 2 were found with balled-up socks lodged down their throats, and 4 were nude or partially so from the waist down. All of his victims were addicted to drugs, which Harvey said Solomon took advantage of. That pretty much fueled his desire to hunt throwaways, people he knew nobody would care about. And he knew they wanted that drug. Solomon, who had previously been diagnosed as a mentally disordered sex offender and a sexually violent predator, was in and out of prison following convictions in a series of sadistic sexual assaults in the 1970s, all targeting young women. He was a monster. He slashed and burned in that community. John Cabrera, the detective who worked with Harvey and has since retired from the department, told the Epoch Times. There are 11 or 12 girls, we have 7 bodies, and could only get him on 6. He was going through them like water. And he never would have stopped. The detective at one point ran a missing persons unit and was able to find a few matches with coroner's reports, we had all these bodies. But he is still missing 4 girls to this day. He should have never been back on the streets in the 1970s, Harvey said, pointing to very weak laws at the time. He killed this girl, she was a masseuse, and they found her remains in the Santa Clara Mountains. She had been dispatched to Morris's house. But they couldn't get him on this because they didn't have enough evidence. After several attempts, Solomon agreed to sit for the first of 3 interviews with Harvey while on death row at San Quentin, on one condition. The young journalist spent all the money he had at the commissary and showed up with a tray of snacks. The first few minutes, that turned my stomach, Harvey said, describing an intelligent and extremely calculated man, a pathological liar who knew how to talk, and an experienced carpenter who sized up the dimensions of the room they were in. Solomon maintained his innocence. There's no doubt this man did these murders, Harvey said. This is probably one of the most calculated murderers in California history, as far as I'm concerned. A lot of it was circumstantial evidence, but it all makes a beeline to Morris Solomon Jr., the homicidal handyman. The death of one of California's most sadistic killers will bring solace to some, but it means there are questions that may never be answered. I really feel bad for the families, they need some type of closure, said Harvey. Cabrera, the detective, said he always thought Solomon might find it in his heart and tell him where the other 4 girls were. He recalled one who was still missing. Her father was a retired Sacramento police officer. He called me for years, he said, please don't forget about my daughter. We haven't found her to this day, Cabrera said, adding that the father has since died. police working the case, Harvey recalled, strongly suspected the itinerant handyman of more than the Oak Park murders. From Louisiana to Arizona to California, cops told me there's a busload of people Maura Solomon may have killed, he said.